Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you listening in today. We're going to have a lot of fun today talking with Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She and I are, and Brian Huddleston will be all together at 9:30 on Saturday to talk with you as part of Garden Expo. And so we'll deal with that a little bit later on, but certainly we're happy to answer your gardening questions, or she is at least, and I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. I hope you're looking forward to Garden Expo, and hope you're going, and that's wonderful. If you aren't going and or have some questions, please do join in. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Lisa Johnson, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
We have callers online already, but and we'll get Charlotte, we'll get to you in just a minute, but I want to start by talking about the weather and what impact, if any, it's had on some of our plants, perennials, for example. Is there?
Yeah, I'm kind of worried, particularly about some of our semi-evergreen type perennials like coral bells. Because of the rain that we've had on top of the snow, the rain sifting through, of course, to the bottom layer, which means that our perennials will be sitting in a good old layer of ice. And usually ice around the crowns is not a good thing, particularly for some of the semi-evergreens, but also mums don't tolerate that very well. Rudbeckias, other things that are sensitive to winter drainage. So we may have some issues there. And also the up and down thing that we've had this year where it's been really warm, and then it's gotten cold, and then it's been really warm again. I'm a little worried about some of the evergreens coming in and out of dormancy and losing moisture, so we may see some winter burn. Some things may not have gone into dormancy particularly well. I'm thinking of some of the marginally hardy woody species like Japanese maples. May see some dieback there. Hard to know.
Hard to know. You know, as I was driving to work this morning, I was just kind of flipping around on the radio dial, and I happened to hit on a commercial, and there was a commercial for a tree service and talking about pruning and how this is a good time of the year to be pruning. And I thought, oh, that's probably a good time to be having that ad if you're going to do it.
Yeah, very much so. And usually we say that any time from usually January through the end of March. And this year I was getting people that were asking about pruning, and I didn't know what to tell them because it was still pretty darn warm in January. And I kept saying, wait a couple weeks, just to make sure that everything was completely into dormancy. So hopefully, I think everything is dormant now.
But I think so.
It stays that way as the
including fruit tree. Is there anything special on fruit tree pruning?
Not really. I mean, we may, again, because of the weird winter, see some problems with some of our marginally hardy things like peaches. You know, because the flower buds have to overwinter when we have, you know, either an early spring frost or we have problems with dormancy or really cold winters, you can kill off the flower buds. So it's an iffy thing. It's amazing to me sometimes that anything actually does as well as it does.
Survives it. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Agent for Dane County. Always great to have her come by. A lot of fun with her when she's with us. Charlotte in O'Connell has been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Hi, Charlotte. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. You know, about a month ago, I was coming home in my car listening to your program, and a gentleman called in, and something was eating his sweet corn. And the guest you had on, nobody could figure out. They said it wasn't a raccoon because a raccoon rips the whole thing down. This was just doing a very neat job and stripping the ears off and eating my sweet corn. That made me mad. Well, I have my farmhouse next door. I rent out to Lauren. He's sitting on his front deck, and who comes with an ear of corn and sat and ate it right in front of him in the tree, and it's a fox squirrel. And they do a very neat job of stripping it down and everything and don't do any harm otherwise. But I tell you, them's fighting words with me because I like my sweet corn and I like my popcorn. And they better stay out of there.
Charlotte, thank you so much. So, you know, squirrels can do it, I guess. And I was thinking back to, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I visited a friend. He's got a farm. He rents the land out, really, to a farmer. And the guy, there was a patch of corn that he didn't get to pick, didn't get around to picking. And I was there in sort of January, I think, and I went down the rows. Deer tracks, of course, everywhere. There was not a single kernel of corn left on any, not a one, on any plant. So deer can come in and do some, and left the cob was right on the stalk yet.
Wow.
So there's another animal that can do some damage. Charlotte, thanks again. Appreciate it. Michaela, from Madison. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for having me. I was just curious. Last year I planted two bell pepper plants in my garden, and they grew up. And they did not produce any peppers, but they were growing in height. Do you know the reason for that?
How high did they get?
Just 3 feet, maybe. They were extremely tall.
Did you use any nitrogen fertilizer?
No, I am all organic.
Okay. Did you plant in straight compost?
No. Okay.
When did you plant?
Mother's Day.
Okay. That's still all good.
I was trying to remember what Mother's Day was like. Well, Mother's Day is...
That's late enough. That shouldn't be too much of an issue. We did have some cool weather issues last year. I had a lot of people tell me their peppers weren't producing as well as they should. But usually when you get a lot of leaves and a lot of vertical growth, it means that there's an excess of nitrogen, which is why I was asking about the fertilizer and about what your soil was like. If you were growing in, you know, manure, or you used chicken manure, or, you know, something that's high in nitrogen, it could have caused something like that.
You might have gotten a little cold shot, and if you got a cold shot,
that can happen too.
I really never plant the pepper. I never put the peppers in until later than Mother's, more like the end of the month.
Yeah, it may in the Madison area. May 15th is our supposed day for being able to plant tomatoes and peppers. But in a cool year, I often will wait until the 20th or the 25th. So that could
Memorial weekend is more.
Yeah, it's still. Sorry?
Memorial weekend would be a better time?
Yeah. Depending on what the weather's like that season. Back in 2012 when we had all that really warm weather. Well, then we had an issue where people planted way too early. And then, of course, the weather corrected. Yeah. And around Mother's Day, we had what they called the Mother's Day Massacre in the fruit orchards because we had a frost. Yeah, usually the 15th or the 20th is safe, but you really have to look at what the weather is doing that year. If it's been a cold year, I would wait. Yeah. But I think that usually if peppers get cold weather, they're stunting. But shot of high growth, I don't understand how that comes in.
So...
You got a mystery. You stumped us right away.
There had to be a lot of nitrogen involved
in
there.
Yeah, somewhere.
Somehow along the line. So maybe you had a lot of nitrogen and a cold spell that... You know, the combination, they'd still grow pretty tall with good nitrogen in the soil. And if they got the cold spot.
Yeah, then it might have aborted the flower buds. And, you know, if it isn't going to flower, then the energy does go into producing more vegetative growth. So that could have fed into it, too. That's the wonderful thing about horticulture is that there's so much, you know, you can theorize, but...
Two years in a row, I planted peppers too early.
Oh.
And I got no peppers.
Yeah.
And then it took 2 years to get smart.
Oh.
Because I was like, oh, early May, you know, like the 7th or so.
No.
Oh, Michaela, thanks. I hope we answered your question.
Or gave you some good clues anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Joshua in Mineral Point. Hi, thank you for calling.
Listening to your show, and I've been wondering, I raise hogs, I farrow hogs and fatten pigs, and then I also do 2 acres of produce for the farmer's market.
Cool.
So naturally, most of my fertilizer is hog fertilizer, which is mixed with corn fodder. I raise them in bed packs, so I don't raise them in pens. I have them out in bed packs, so it's a lot of corn fodder mixed with some hog manure, and I was wondering if I have 2 pear trees I planted last summer and a plum tree, and I got plenty of apple trees on the farm, so I decided to plant some more fruit trees to get more of a variety for the farmer's market. I was wondering if that would be a good fertilizer or no, or if it would burn them out. I don't want to kill the trees.
Yeah, so. you want to make sure, of course, that it's well rotted, so, you know, it should sit for a season. First, usually for most fruit trees, I'm trying to remember the formula. I think it's 1 ounce of nitrogen per caliper inch. I would have to check that. But in general, for fruit trees, you want to keep your nitrogen level pretty low so that you push them to produce fruit rather than a bunch of leaves. I haven't seen any research on that, but you might try the CIAS, the Center for Integrated Agricultural
Systems.
Studies. Yeah, systems or studies? I never remember. I think you're right, systems. Because they've done a lot of, they're all about organics, and they've done a number of trials with various kinds of organic fertilizers. I don't remember whether trees are in there, but they also did the Eco Apple program where they did a lot of work with fruit growers. So you might try that. Other than that, we do have that wonderful publication, Growing Apple Trees in Wisconsin, and it does address different kinds of fertilizers, and that's at the Learning Store.
The learningstore.uwex.edu. or just type in UW Extension Learning Store and it'll pop up. Joshua, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Turning to Daniel next in Madison.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about lawn maintenance and care, and it really comes down to a question I heard in a conversation recently. Somebody brought up the subject of seeding bare spots or thin spots in your lawn during the winter. Is that realistic?
I would say no.
Okay. That's a pretty quick answer.
There is something known as dormant seeding, where seed is put down like in November before the first snow.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, if you put it down now, it might wash out during the spring rains.
Okay.
And if the seed freezes, I don't know, if you put it down before the snow falls and then you have the snow as a blanket, that usually keeps the seed pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
But in a year like this where we got ice underneath the snow, it might not do too well anyway. I just think it's a risky thing to do. It can work very well, but...
Especially with just bare spots.
Yeah.
I mean, I did an entire lawn that way once.
Did you? How'd it work?
Pretty well, but it's not as well as it... After the fact, I just experimented with it. It's my own lawn, so I just went ahead and did it.
Are you saying that you did seed during the winter?
I seeded in spring while there was still snow on the ground, and I covered this. I threw the seed out.
Yeah, that's
on the snow.
That's better than doing it this time of year, but still you run the risk of having the seed freeze.
Okay. I had some weeds.
Okay, can you handle one more question? What's the best way to deal with rhubarb after it matures or after the season ends? Should it all be cut back?
No, you should leave it up. That's going to provide food for next season. So take off the flowers.
Okay, and what about feeding it? I know it needs serious feeding, as I understand it.
I never...
It's pretty vigorous stuff.
I guess it depends on your soil, but I'm just plain old lawn, rhubarb next to the lawn.
I've forked in a little bit of rotted cow manure.
That's not going to hurt. That certainly will be fine. You know, the manures, unless they are not composted, are not so high in nitrogen that they're going to cause an issue. Usually a spring feeding is fine, but rhubarb really doesn't need a whole lot. It's not a diva plant. It doesn't need a whole lot of extra care.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just a diva gardener.
There you go, Dan. Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at all kinds of lawn and gardening questions today with Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Love to have her on. Just to let you know, next week we're going to be getting some advice from the authors of the book titled What's Wrong with My Houseplant? A new book that's out, and it'll kind of be fun to talk with them. But right now, Lisa knows a lot about a lot of different topics here, so join in with your questions. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Judy and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering, I live in town and I do organic straw bale gardening. And my neighbor sprays quite a bit on his yard, his grass, and I was wondering if that would affect my gardening.
Okay.
Are you selling organically, or you're just asking for yourself?
Just asking for myself. And okay. My
are the straw bales on is your garden on the same side of the house that he's spraying on?
No.
Okay. Well, that'll help to block things. I mean, certainly if he sprays on a windy day, there is potential of getting some...
drift.
Yeah, drift. But if you have not experienced any symptoms of, particularly tomato plants and squash plants being affected, those are kind of our... canary in the coal mine. very sensitive plants, then I wouldn't worry about it too much, especially since your straw bales are raised.
For sure. I wouldn't worry about it, but Joel Karsten, who wrote the book on straw bale gardening, is going to be at Garden Expo. I don't know if you were planning to come. I mean, you've got a long drive, Judy, to get to Garden Expo at the Dane County Expo Center.
I'm going to be there.
Perfect. Because Joel is giving several seminars over the weekend.
One of them.
Over the course of the time, and you might want to just sit in on one of those. Because his topic is building a straw bale garden.
Yeah.
And he probably almost for sure will have comments about the whole range of straw bale gardening. Mm-hmm. I love it, by the way. So you and I are we're soul brother and sister when it comes to straw bale gardens.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Chuck in Waukesha, we turn to you. Hi, Chuck. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have some wild black raspberries growing on the northwest side of my garage. I was wondering if there's any way to transplant them. My daughter-in-law would like some in the Sullivan, and I said, sure, you can have some of these. I must get about almost 2 gallons of black raspberries a year.
Wow.
Out of this group. I mean, they're just loving it. It's in a little gully, gets lots of water, but I just wondered if there was a way to transplant them. And I think they've just started because the birds flew over and just deposited them for me. That's the way I could think how they started.
Okay. Well, yes, you can, because they have underground structures that you can transplant them. They have a rhizomatous system where they're pretty much all connected. That being said, usually it is not recommended because black raspberries tend to be a reservoir for diseases that can get into your red raspberries or other things. So I guess if your daughter doesn't have any other raspberries, or her neighbors don't have any other raspberries, then, you know, go ahead and do it. These days we're being very careful about recommending digging up stuff and passing it on, particularly because of not only diseases but crazy worms.
Jumping worms.
Jumping worms, particularly in the Madison area, being an issue. You're in Waukesha. I don't know whether you have them in your area, but just something to watch out for. But you can transplant them.
Well, I notice. Well, if I do have those, will I notice them on my raspberry plants?
They are a ground species. They look very similar to an earthworm, but behaviorally they're very different. They jump and thrash around, and the big problem with them is what they do to the soil. They make it into these little pellets that don't wet up very easily, and really can kind of destroy the structure of the soil, and particularly in wooded areas, we're very concerned about them there.
Okay, so when it's cold like now, I go into the raspberry bed and I cut out all the dead canes. Is there anything else I have to do to this to keep it going as well as it is?
I would say no. You're doing what you should do. You take out the old canes right after they flower. Instead of leaving them to winter, and of course making sure that you thin them to between 2 and 6 plants per foot, or per foot of row. That's about all you need to do.
Yeah. Okay.
But if your daughter doesn't have a similar growing condition or soil, you might have
some issues.
She may not have the success you're having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. The only reason I thin them out in the winter time is because those prickers are really sharp, and I put all my clothes on and go right in there and chop them out without getting.
There's no reason you can't do it during the winter. That is absolutely fine. A lot of people wait to do it. If you've been having disease issues, which it doesn't sound like you have, then I do recommend doing it right after they bear their fruit. But, you know, if you're not having a problem, then don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Thanks a lot, Chuck, for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff in Lake Mills emailed us, and he says, I grew vegetables in beds. The bed started as typical tilled soil, but I'm moving more and more to lasagna-style sheet compost beds. Some beds are a blend of dirt and compost. I want to test my soil, but I have had bad things about the reliability of home soil test kits. It would be expensive to send samples from each bed, 12 to 15 total, to a lab. Any recommendations on how I can test my beds? Is there anything at the Garden Expo that would help me? I don't know that they're... I don't think they're taking...
I agree with you about the home test kits. Generally, you get what you pay for, so if you pay $20, that's probably not going to be a very accurate reading. The soil testing lab does charge about $15 per sample. So the thing is, if you wanted to buy a home testing probe that was good, you'd probably have to spend about $150. And that yeah. might be just about what you'd need to spend to get all of the beds tested. The other thing you might consider doing is testing the beds, you know, three of them at a time or something like that.
Yeah, you know, those beds, they're if they're the similar composition, you're
you would think they'd be probably, and you might, what you might do is just try three or four of them, and if they are similar and you've been using similar materials in each one, then probably you're doing okay.
Yep.
That's probably a good enough baseline.
Let's go to Ashley next in Coloma. Hi, Ashley. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about apple trees. I've got a few in my yard. And one of them is quite tall, and this last year had tons of apples on it. There's places where we can't reach, and it still has just, it's holding on to those apples we couldn't reach. Is that going to harm the tree with those rotting apples being on it? Should I get out there and knock those off? This is my first year with any kind of fruit tree, so I have no idea.
How many apples are we talking about, and how old are the trees?
Oh, I don't know how old the trees are because they were already here and matured when we bought the house.
Okay, so it's a big tree.
Yeah, so I'd say the tree is probably 25 feet tall. And from what I can see, there's probably about 30 apples left on the tree where we couldn't reach.
Okay. And kind of what is the diameter of the trunk? Just a ballpark. Are we looking at 12 inches or 20
inches? I'd say the trunk of the tree is, it's not very thick. I would say no more than 8, maybe 10 inches around.
Oh, wow.
Wow,
so
that's small.
That's a newer tree then. Usually, you know, there could be an issue if they're really big apples and it's a younger tree.
No, they're pretty small.
Okay, if they're pretty small, I guess I wouldn't worry about it. What will happen come spring is that they will fall off, or the birds will get them early in spring. So that's, I take it these must be full-sized apple trees. These are not dwarf or semi-dwarf trees, so you're probably going to continue to have that issue.
Okay.
I wouldn't, unless you've had, you know, significant disease problems or something like that, I guess I don't think that small apples are going to be an issue. If it were bigger apples on a younger tree, then that could be a weight problem if we get, you know, freezing rain or something like that, where we get a load on the branches. But if you don't see a lot of bending or anything like that, then I think you're probably okay.
And
yeah, the only bending I saw was when all the apples were coming to ripen, and that made me nervous just because there's so much and the branches they're not very thick. Is there a way to shape it to keep it within reach, or is it just kind of I'm gonna have to use a ladder?
Yeah, well, it's harder with a standard size tree, but I would recommend going to the Learning Store online, learningstore.uwex.edu, and we have a publication called Training and Pruning Apple Trees, and that will tell you really should prune every year.
And there's a right way and a wrong way, for sure.
Absolutely. So
you want to do it right.
Yeah. And what you might have is an alternate year bearer, too, from what you're telling me about how many apples. It's important to thin those apples on alternate year bearers. It's important to thin, period. But it's particularly important with alternate year bearers so that you can kind of even out the load. It takes a tree a lot of energy to produce all those apples, and it might have produced so many this year with an alternate year bearer that you don't get very many next year. So that'll be interesting for you to watch to see whether you possibly have an alternate year bearer. And will tell you in our publication, Growing Apples in Wisconsin, also at the Learning Store, it will tell you about thinning, when to thin, and how much to thin.
I've got a friend who's got an aluminum a pole that projects out and with the nippers on the end of it with a rope.
Oh, yeah.
And he just... Those he can't get to, he just nips them off and down they come.
Yeah, that's a good idea, too. You could certainly do that for those
hard-to-get ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually works pretty good, pretty well. Yeah, thanks a lot. Good luck, Ashley.
Thank
you know, it'd be fun to call back next year or call back in, around harvest time and let us know how many apples you've got in that tree.
Yeah.
I'm betting you're not going to have very many apples.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my bet. I hope I'm proven wrong. Carol in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to move us back indoors for a little bit.
Okay.
I have a neighbor who goes to California every year, and he leaves his house plants with me. And I had wonderful luck with a succulent plant. I have no idea what it is, but it just grows like crazy. And so this past year, he had a jade plant that looked a little sickly. And he gave it to me when he left for California and said, maybe you can do something with it. Well, it's absolutely dying on me. Pieces are just falling off of it, and it's a relatively old plant. And it seems as though the stems are hollow.
Oh.
These pieces fall off. And I wonder, is there anything I can do to revive this plant?
Sounds like you've got a case of root and crown rot going
yeah.
on there. Maybe he overwatered it. That's just my guess when you have deterioration like that. You could try and take cuttings off of it. With a succulent like a jade plant, you take cuttings and you let the ends callus off in the air, leave them sitting out for a little while, maybe a couple of days. Usually they will start to produce air roots, and then you can transplant them into a cactus mix. So you could try that. But whatever you use to cut those cuttings off of the plant, make sure that you disinfect it with rubbing alcohol in between cuts, because if there is some kind of pathogen in there, you could transmit it to other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would try.
Yep.
Okay, so there's no hope for the whole plant.
No, it doesn't sound
probably,
like it.
Probably not. I mean,
yeah.
You could probably take it out of the pot and
yeah,
take a
see
look.
If the roots are mushy.
They must be.
Yeah. If they're mushy, they're probably goners.
Yeah.
No, they are not probably there. they're goners.
There goes my reputation with houseplants.
But if you do the cuttings, you're saving it, because
yeah.
they would have happened anyway if
yeah.
he'd been there. So you're saving
okay.
it in that way.
Right. And you might have already gotten it in a compromised position, you know. So,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I think I did. It wasn't looking good when it came in.
Yeah,
house,
so I wouldn't blame yourself for that.
I would.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing you could do is you could... Go to the garden center and buy another jade plant that looks as close to the looks of that one as possible. Take it home. Take the other one out of the pot. Disinfect the pot. And
you're
put
going
it
to
in.
A lot of trouble there, Larry.
Well, she sounds like she really wants to maintain her reputation. But I do the cuttings. Probably the cheap way is to do the cuttings for sure. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Oh, my goodness me. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Harriet and Muscadet next. Hi, Harriet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. When you brought up soil structure, it brought something to mind. I have 8 large raised beds, and the soil, you know, disappears every year to some extent.
Yep.
And I always have to add either compost or composted manure to it. And my question is sometimes I get concerned about ruining the structure every year by killing the new stuff in. Is that something I need to worry about?
Not really in a raised bed setting. The danger with raised beds is having soil in it that, or manure or compost, whatever, that is too heavy. In a confined structure like a raised bed or a pot, you kind of risk the stuff turning into cement. So it really can get very compacted in those kinds of settings. So I think that tilling in raised beds is really, or just, you know, forking or shoveling it up a little bit really does help. I usually tend to add about half compost or half manure, and then the other half I use a commercial potting soil, because usually that doesn't actually have much soil in it. It's got ground up sedge or reeds or coconut fiber, some peat moss, some things that are going to keep the soil from getting too heavy. So I don't think that you need to worry about that.
Okay. All so right. Do you mean regular potting soil?
Or yeah.
In seed starting?
No, regular potting soil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not all seed right. starting mix. That's too light, and that's not okay. going to be helpful either.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a Facebook comment from Bonnie, who said, in the recent snowstorm, a white pine in our yard got so laden down with snow that its tip bent all the way to the ground. And the tree is at least 40 feet tall. Oh, my goodness me. I shook the snow off of it the next day, and it only returned halfway up. I'm concerned it might be permanently bent. Is there any hope it will return to normal? I could just give a quick example from our neighborhood of a couple of years back where we had a similar situation, and a boy pine was bent all the way over.
Mm.
But it wasn't 40 feet. It was probably 25 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And shook the snow off of it, and it looked like heck. At first, it came about halfway up. But by the end of the season, it was, it had tried to get back up to where the sun was, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it had straightened out pretty close.
I think it probably will. You might want to have an arborist take a look at it. But usually a younger white pine will come back from that sort of thing.
I think so as well. Sarah from Sparta coming up next, but you can join in too. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. We're going to be part of Garden Expo. It's going on this entire weekend in Madison at the Dane County Expo Center. It's always a great time. I love going there because, frankly, it's usually miserable outside.
Usually the coldest weekend of the year.
It usually is, and it's going to be a cold one this weekend. But you get inside there, and it's warm, toasty warm, and there you can smell the flowers and the plants, and it's just, oh. And there are some things that I purchase there every year. There are companies that, you know, come back every year, and that's where I do some of my buying, and I always enjoy doing it. And Lisa and I and Brian Huddleston will be at 9:30 Saturday morning. We are talking about a whole variety of things. We'll talk about that later. We have Sarah in Sparta now, though, who's been waiting. So let's go to Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about a rose bush. My when my mother moved after my father had passed, he was an avid rose gardener, and we always had this one on a trellis in the back that he never covered, and it did very well. Well, I was able to take part of it and move it to my house, and it did well in the front of the house. It got a fair amount of sun. I moved down the alley and moved it again, and now it's struggling. It's not getting the amount of sun it did before, and I'm wondering if this is the cause now. And it also gets very fungal, so I'm not sure if I should move it again or...
Yeah, you probably... probably in a wetter place without as much sun.
Air circulation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An alley.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. Boy, if it isn't in good health, it's hard to recommend moving it. But on the other hand, the health is not going to improve if it's not in a good sunny place with good air circulation.
Right.
So how long has it been since you've moved it this time?
It's been 3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you were moving it, you know, 1 year after another, then I guess, oh boy, I hesitate to say move it, but if it's really not doing well and you've tried whatever you can to improve its situation, you might want to try and move it again.
I could put it in the front of the house, which faces, you know, it gets the sunlight from the west, and I'm there the end of the day. I think right now it is too shaded, but is there anything to kind of, I don't want to move it till fall. Is that correct? Wait till fall to move it, probably?
You usually want to do it in spring.
In spring?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, early spring.
Is there anything that might jumpstart it that I could give it? I tried so many treatments on it to keep the fungus off. And is there anything in particular I should treat it with or just move it and hope for the best?
What kind of soil are you moving it into?
It's still very, very good soil.
Okay.
Very earthy. Yeah, I mean,
it's
very good, not sandy.
Decent drainage, but it's got a good organic matter content. And
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are some root stimulators you could try.
Okay.
I have not a whole lot of confidence in them, but there are some good products out there that you might want to look at. Other than that, if it's good soil, just, you know, babying it along, I wouldn't want to add a whole lot of fertilizer or anything like that. I'd wait a season to do that, see how it's hanging in there, and try and keep it as disease free as you can to keep it not stressed.
Probably the lack of sun is really what's...
Yeah.
That's the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought, this is a good spot, you know, right on the trellis, but it just is too dark. So what have I got to lose? I'll try it.
Yeah, why not?
See how it does. Yeah, yes. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Matt in Springbrook up next with a question. Matt, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Hey, the last couple of years in a row, I've ended up with some little brown spots all over my tomatoes. They're still edible, but they're kind of useless for canning.
Okay.
And
when you little brown spot, what
how little?
Would they be, like a dime size or?
No, they're smaller. They look like they got if you imagine. They're speckled with them.
Oh,
okay.
So dots, kind of almost like dots.
Yes.
Okay.
It might be a bacterial problem, could be a fungal problem. If Brian Huddleston were here, I'm sure he could take a stab at it. But there are an awful lot of tomato pathogens out there. Now, you're just seeing it on the fruit, not the leaves?
Yes, the plants are real healthy. It's just the fruit. And
is it just one variety or all varieties?
The cherries, don't get it, but I plant them along the edge of the fence. I'm kind of a lazy gardener. I just been the last few years I've been throwing down a piece of landscape fabric, cutting through it, and I just let my tomatoes sprawl all over the ground.
Oh, okay. Well, there's your problem.
There you go.
There are a lot of diseases that even with the landscape fabric that can get your tomatoes. Could be septoria, which is usually a leaf spot, but I'm betting that you're getting some kind of fungal pathogen from contact with the ground, because every time that you water or that it rains, you can get stuff that will still come up through the landscape fabric. So trellis, and keep the tomatoes thinned out so that you get good air circulation.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Would this eventually kind of go away after a few years? Because I kind of like being a lazy gardener.
Probably not. to be honest.
Well, you know, if you bought, I still use tomato cages. I don't know
yeah,
if you recommend.
That's what I would recommend.
That's the lazy way to do it.
You put the
cages out right away.
Yeah.
Make sure you've got enough room between your plants so that they're not crushed together.
Yep. Or use the straw bales like Larry does.
Yeah, or use the straw bales, which never have any trouble at all with straw bales, so.
You're one of the few, Larry. But I get all the calls from people who have problems with it, so that's probably just my perception. But tomatoes are very sensitive to a number of soil-borne pathogens, and unfortunately there are a lot of them out there, and they tend to be pretty long-lived. So I would absolutely trellis onto a tomato cage or some kind of support to keep them off the ground.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, we mentioned straw bale gardening, and Pam had sent us a note on Facebook. She's interested in the straw bale gardening seminar that there will be several that Joel Carson's going to have at the Garden Expo over the weekend here in Madison. Pam says we have two dogs that love to dig. So raised beds aren't even a good idea because they'd love to dig in that. So she's thinking maybe straw bales and wondering, you know, have people had a lot of good experiences with it? And I have.
Yeah.
I've had great experience with tomatoes and peppers and squash and... a lot of, you know, things like parsley and that sort of thing I've had really good luck with.
You do need to water more with a straw bale than you do with in-ground or raised beds, just because it doesn't hold the water as much. But it can be very successful, particularly depending on what type of crops you're growing. And the ones that you mentioned, Larry, seem to do pretty well. We've heard, I think, that cucumbers don't seem to do very well.
I haven't tried cucumbers, but
the peppers and I've heard
good luck
a lot
with
of
squash.
Yeah.
So.
And if you can get to hear Joel, definitely go do it.
And
or you can buy his book.
Well. Yeah,
He's
and buy his book.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good book on straw bale gardening. And I've just stuck potatoes right down on the bales.
Yeah, I hear potatoes do
potatoes
really well.
Potatoes do great. Yeah. And actually, with the leftover straw from the year before, I just piled it in a big pile, and I've said this on the show before, I just take some seed potatoes and lift up the straw and just throw them in. The whole planting of the potatoes takes, 4 minutes, maybe?
Okay, so we should recommend to the previous caller that he'd probably like that.
Oh, so it's always a lot of fun. We had an email, a comment from Greg in Duluth, Minnesota. While growing up in the UP, an old neighbor once told me the best way to ensure a good rhubarb harvest for decades into the future was to dig a deep hole, toss in a sheep's carcass, refill the hole, and plant your rhubarb.
Now, okay, well, I don't think that meets extension criteria for recommendation, but
I think I only have three or four sheep carcasses left. I'm not sure that I can. oh boy. We have, you know, it's kind of interesting. Oh, and Brian wondered, this is another thing we should, I definitely want to bring up. Bought a house with three raised beds made of railroad ties. The ties are stacked three high. What about the creosote transloading to the, locating to the veggies grown in the bed? I hear creosote can be pretty nasty. Looking at removing all the soil, but don't want to if I, there's no need to worry. But I certainly
definitely need to worry. Yeah.
Yeah, I would not.
I would remove all the railroad ties, remove all the soil, and basically start over. You want to use non-treated timbers. So if you can get cedar or even using what we use at the teaching garden is we actually use decking that is made out of a composite material that's wood and plastic.
Looks good.
Yeah, it looks good and it does not ever rot. but you want to stay away from anything that's treated with arsenic, absolutely. So anything that has that green tinge to it that's been treated. Pressure treated is okay, or cedar or the decking material, but those old railroad ties have a lot of toxic stuff in them, and I would definitely not use that soil for anything you're going to eat.
Definitely not. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa, a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. She always does such a wonderful job on this program, and great to have her as a guest and a friend as well here on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. It was always great to have her with us. And by golly, here she is to talk about your garden, be it, or maybe your lawn, or maybe your trees. You can talk about all kinds of things. And join in, 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, we're going to talk about Garden Expo. And I'm really lucky to have Melinda Myers joining us. Melinda, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. And hi, Lisa. It's great to join both of you and talk about the Garden Expo.
Oh,
it's so
wonderful.
Great to hear from you.
I know, we only pass occasionally at garden events, Lisa.
I know. Used to see you all the time when I was in Milwaukee.
Exactly. We miss you, but we'll just have to come to Dane County to see you.
Well, listen, you're going to be a busy gal at Garden Expo, are you not?
You bet. I'm so excited. This is the second year I'll be returning, and I'll be there on Saturday presenting at 9:15 on how to create a pollinator's garden. Back on Sunday at 12:45 to do small plants with big impact. And that's thanks to the American Transmission Company and our Grow Smart program that trying to get the word out how we can all make a difference and help our pollinators out and help our gardens as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. It really, isn't it a lot of fun to go?
I am so excited. Spring is when I'm out traveling and busy, and it was so exciting for me last year to get to present at the expo, and so glad I get to come back. And, of course, you come with an empty car is all I have to recommend, preferably some money in your bank account or a good charge card. And I walked off with garden art, some variety of things for my garden, great plant ideas, talking to the folks from Extension, seeing other presentations. The energy in that place is unbelievable. It's that boost we all need. And you'll meet gardeners from all over Wisconsin. I think I met some from Illinois and Iowa even, and Minnesota.
Yeah, it's absolutely a highlight. And there are things I was talking about earlier on the show. There are things that I buy every year there from the same.
So you come with an empty car and a big checkbook, too. Okay.
And a checkbook. Got to do that. And the thing is, it's going to be cold outside, but inside it's going to be wonderful, and it's going to smell great, and it's just, you just start feeling, spring can't be that far off.
Exactly. It is kind of that first glimpse of spring in my book. It's like, okay, the expo is here. That means spring is not far behind. We can just get excited, start visualizing the changes we want to make in the garden, maybe add some new plans because you'll be so inspired by the things you see and the people you meet and talk to. And, you know, walking through the exhibit hall, I'm sure this is the same way with you two, is you run into so many fellow gardeners that you've met along the way. And, you know, oh, did you see this? And you need to go to this aisle and check that out. Or I carried a piece of garden art through, and it took me about 20 minutes to get to the door to leave because there was, what, where did you get that? What booth was that? I was glad I bought mine first.
Oh, man. Well, so now tell me once more, you're going to be at 9:15, you're talking about what?
Creating a pollinator's garden. I know we're all very concerned, not only about the monarchs, but the bees and our native bees, and I'm going to talk about butterflies and moths and beetles and how we can create a good habitat and plants that will help bring them into our garden. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing for our benefit, not only because of the good they do for our food production, but, boy, having butterflies and moths and seeing that activity is great. And that's Saturday at 9:15.
Sunday is different.
Small plants with big impact. So if you've got a small space or even if you have a large space, there's a lot of new cultivars out, and it took me days to kind of narrow down the choice, and the list is still kind of long, so I might have to weed out a few more plants, but it's like, this is too cool. You're going to want to try this, and that added to my plant list of things to order as well. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. So some new varieties, that a couple that won't be available till 2017, but the gardeners that come to the expo, beginning, experienced, and they're very elite gardeners. So no matter where you fall on that spectrum, there's other people in that, and you'll find something. So I have something for all of you. The easy to find, all are easy to grow. And then the few of those, yeah, if you like a challenge, give these a shot.
Belinda, we'll see you tomorrow at Garden Expo.
That sounds great. You guys have a good day. We'll see you at, see you in Madison.
All right.
Have a great day.
Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based host of Melinda's Garden Moments and author of more than 20 gardening books, as a matter of fact.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's an amazing collection of books. Somebody wrote to me and said, hey, what do you recommend for books for gardening? And my first comment was, well, go to Melinda Myers online and you're going to find a lot of books. And I'm sure she's going to be there with her books. So if people are there. Now, of course, we've got a little competition because we're on, you and I are on at 9:30 with Brian Hoddleston. And Brian is bringing some slides and photos of three or four diseases that he worries about for the coming year and how to identify those.
Mm-hmm.
Diseases and so forth. And you're going to be doing, you're going to bring a few slides yourself.
Yeah, we've put it together as a power. It's actually kind of funny because you've got beautiful plant picture, disease, death picture. Beautiful plant picture, disease, death picture. So it'll be fun. And I also threw in a few insects that I thought would be generate some discussion.
And of course, we'll take questions from the audience like we always do, and that's going to be just a whole lot of fun. And we're on from 9:30 to 10:30.
Yep.
So we're on for an hour, and I have some fabulous prizes to give away too, as always. We've got some books that, so we'll do some drawings, and you'll have a chance to win a book or two as well.
And we've got some prizes here, too, right?
We have some prizes here. We have two pairs of tickets. Oh, we have one pair of tickets left. If you have an interest in going to Garden Expo and have a question for us, call in, and we'll get you on the air, and you can pick up a pair of tickets at Will Call. Any time over the weekend. Let's go to Amy in Oshkosh. Amy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for holding.
Sure, you bet. I am going to be moving this spring, and I have two trees that I'd like to take with me. What's the earliest that I can move them? One is about a 2-foot-tall white pine, and the other is about a 4-foot-tall river birch. I've had them planted in a bed. I'm waiting for them to grow up a little bit more before I transplanted them out into the yard, but now I'm going to be moving.
Usually right after, you know, the frost goes out of the ground, it usually, and definitely for the birch, the earlier, the better, and also for the white pine. So sometime in, let's see, where you live in Oshkosh, yeah, I can't predict when the snow is going to go away in Oshkosh, but yeah, as soon as
you can get
it
a shovel in
the
ground.
Yeah, as soon as you can get a shovel in the ground, it's the time to do it.
Make sure you get it out there wide if you can.
Yeah,
and
get as many roots as you possibly can.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Stephen Sullivan. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. I have a question about potatoes in straw bales. I've heard you extol the virtues of this gardening technique several times, and I went to try it. And I got 2-year-old straw, which was perfect. It was outside. And I planted my potato eyes, and I got a great crop going. And my wife and I had a wager. She went into the soil in the other garden, and I went into straw. And I got a great crop of potatoes that were chewed up by mice.
Oh,
I lost
no.
About 95% of my crop, and I lost the bet.
Oh.
So how do you preclude mice from eating your crop?
You know, I wonder if it'd be... And were those bales out for 2 years?
Well, I got them from a farmer friend of mine, and I had them set up in the garden, in the soil garden, 1 year, and then I transported them to a different place in more sunshine for my potato garden the next year.
Wow. Were they were sitting on the ground, I assume.
Well, they're on the ground framed with pressure-treated lumber, so it kept them all in a nice shape.
Were they near a wood pile or an area
No.
where... Wow.
Out in the middle of my small pasture.
Ay, oh boy, oh boy. I had any problem. You know, I've been only doing it for 3 or 4 years now, I have never had that problem. And frankly, I use that pile of straw that
mm-hmm.
just sits
yeah.
in the kind of up against the house almost. And I had nothing. I mean, it was.
Do you have generally a high population of rodents?
Well, it's out in the field. We probably have moles and some voles and
okay.
mice.
Okay,
but
so it's
there,
not near your house. It's
no.
not near your
no.
house then. Mm-hmm. I think if you have it nearer the house or even on the driveway, if you're out in a rural area, you're likely to have
yeah.
more of those critters. You have any cats? They're not doing their job.
My neighbor
you...
used to have cats, yeah, but he moved away, and then I got overrun with chipmunks last summer.
Oh, boy. Sounds like you've got a rodent paradise out there.
I think I do.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I don't know what else we could do short of actually get it. You'd almost have to encase the bales.
Yeah, like in hardware cloth, because chicken wire isn't going to do it.
Chicken wire isn't going to do it. Hardware cloth, obviously, is
yeah.
going to do it. But that's a lot of work, too.
Right, and you have to make sure to make holes where you can access your mm-hmm. your stuff. That's a tough one without using, like, a rodent poison, which I really hate
no,
to recommend.
I don't like to recommend that either. Short of hardware cloth, maybe somebody else hasn't had an experience. So stay listening, Steve. We'll see if we get somebody else with that problem. It's one that I haven't had in my years of using straw bales.
If you're going to the Garden Expo, I'd ask Joel.
Yeah, man, if you're going to be at the Garden Expo, Joel Karsten would really be the person to talk to because he does so much. He does so many bales.
Yeah.
He's got a huge garden of bales. So he might well have had that experience. Maybe not. Anyway, I wish we could help, but we can't. Stephanie in Beaver Dam, maybe we can help you. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
What have you got for us today?
Well, last spring, we planted a little cherry tree in the backyard, and it's in a beautiful spot. It gets lots of water. But I noticed during the summer, these little, I don't know what they are, they look like little leeches that were eating the leaves, and they came right out of the ground, crawled right up.
Do they leave a silvery trail?
Like their slug trail?
Yeah.
They
came out of the ground?
Well, I assumed they came out of the ground. I thought that maybe they were nematodes, but I'm not sure I really know what that is. I just heard that phrase.
Okay. Are they about like a quarter to a half inch long, kind of black, slimy looking things?
Yes. And I would squish them with my fingers. And
yeah. It sounds like a pear slug or a rose slug, which is the larva of a type of sawfly. And they have the delightful habit of piling their own excrement on themselves to make them less appetizing to predators. Certainly wouldn't be appetizing to me if I were a predator.
Right.
And then they feed on the top layer of the cells and kind of create kind of like a window pane look. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. That's, I know we're
one of those two.
Okay. Yeah, we. It's okay. Either probably pear slug, and I know we do have a fact sheet at Brian Huddleston's website. I know they're kind of tough to control. I'm just.
I noticed that like where the branches meet the trunk, it seemed a little sappy. Are they doing that to the tree? Is the tree that in response?
That could be fire blight. Have you seen dieback?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, well then definitely go to Brian Huddleston's site.
Yes.
Look up fire blight. Unfortunately, fire blight is not a curable thing. You can manage it to some degree. You need to do pruning. You need to make sure you disinfect your shears in between cuts. But if it's in the trunk, that's a problem.
It's a goner.
Yeah. It gets into the vascular system. And it can also, because insects will feed on that sap, and it's a bacterial disease, and then transport it to other fruit trees, you probably want to take that.
We usually recommend taking it down.
Yeah, as soon as you can.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I'm sorry. But do check those out. If you just type into whatever search engine, PDDC stands for Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and then UWEX, so PDDC UWEX, and then go to the fact sheets, look for fire blight, and look for...
you'll see some photos.
Yeah, pear slug. You should be able to find those. If you can't find pear slug there, I think it is also, I think they've got something on the learning store as well. But you might want to send in a sample to Brian. I don't want to have you chop down your tree and, you know, find that that isn't what it is.
Yeah.
But usually with sap, especially with cankered areas, sunken areas in the bark and die back, that's usually what it is.
Mm.
I'm sorry. I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Do I have to, it kind of, that makes it sound like I should not be planting another fruit tree there.
It depends. I probably wouldn't put it quite in the same area, but since it's bacterial and it is, you know, borne in usually by insects or by rain splashing, if, you know, it's hard to say that it would cause a problem in that same area.
Okay.
You might want to give Brian a call, too, and talk to him about
it. Yeah, sorry, Stephanie. Or if you're at Garden Expo tomorrow.
Yep.
He's going to be with us tomorrow.
He's got his own booth there, too.
Yes,
the
I heard.
The whole weekend
great.
Long. So.
Great. Yeah. Well, have fun tomorrow, you too. And
thank you.
Thank you for all your information.
Sure. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, 9:30 tomorrow morning. It's when, and it opens, I think, at 9.
Yeah.
The Garden Expo opens at 9, and then we're on at 9:30, and I'm not sure. Once you get there, you'll get information on all of the seminars. You know, I've had already several people say to me, you know, I've gone to the Garden Expo here, and I've gone to the one in Chicago. They all like this one better than the one in Chicago because of the great information. There are the Chicago Garden Expo does not have the kind of seminars, the vast number of seminars that we have at Garden Expo here.
Well,
I mean, it's amazing.
I think since this grew out of being a Wisconsin Public Television event with Shelley Ryan, that, you know, the education was the thing that was always stressed, and having a lot of people from Extension, but also from the industry and talking about, you know, all kinds of things that gardeners want to know.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping we get a nice crowd tomorrow. Well, we've always had a really wonderful crowd, and I'm hoping that continues. I've got all these books to give away tomorrow. I want to do that. Well, let's get Chris in Green Bay a chance. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hey, I'm at a point in my life where the kids are all teenagers now, and I want to take out the playset and put in a raised garden.
Oh, great.
What I'd like to do is do a raised garden, but how many feet of soil do I need to have a good garden where I can plant, like, potatoes or corn or other vegetables, too?
For raised beds, most of our vegetable plants only have a root system that goes about 12 inches. Now, I wouldn't recommend planting corn in a raised bed, but certainly tomatoes, peppers, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, most of the common vegetables will do fine in raised beds. And so usually if you're using the decking, it usually comes, I think, in like 6-inch width. So I usually put about two of those. So about 12 inches high. If you don't want to bend that far down, feel free to take it up another 6 inches. You can do it at whatever depth that you want to. But for keeping the expense down, at 12 inches, fine.
Mm-hmm. I'd go up another one.
Yeah. Okay, Larry, that's fine.
Can I just put that decking right over the grass and do that? I mean,
yeah, you can certainly.
Sure.
Yeah, you don't need to bother to kill off the grass or dig it up or anything.
Nope.
I can't really dig into the grass. It's only about 3 inches of soil, and then I also have the cable TV line runs right under it. So.
Yeah, so piling it on top of the grass is definitely a better option. Then we don't want you digging up your cable.
Okay, thank you.
And make sure when you put in your soil that you use some potting soil and either topsoil mixed together or some manure mixed together. You don't want it to get too heavy.
Yeah, and that's what you get if you just take the...
Yeah, just plain old soil.
Plain old soil.
That will not do.
You don't want that at all. You know, I was thinking the tomato plants, every year when I look at those, when I take the bales out, at the end of the season, the tomato roots go from all the way from the top all the way through to the bottom.
Yep, and into the ground.
And into the ground. Yeah. So it's a little over, a bale itself is on its side is probably, a foot and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and tomatoes can have fairly deep roots, too. So
yeah.
You can certainly grow them in a 12-inch raised bed, but 18
absolutely.
Is, if you don't want to bend over that far, 18 is probably better.
Yeah, I agree. And Lisa, I'll see you tomorrow morning, probably around 9 o'clock or so.
It's always a fun time.
It's always a fun time. We're having a great time at Garden Expo tomorrow. I hope you can make it. We'll be on deck at 9:30. Someplace at the Dane County Expo Center, you'll find our room. We'll be talking about all kinds of things gardening, have some great slides and great photos to share, and also some giveaways. We'll be giving away some books, some gardening, some cooking books as well. So I'm really looking forward to Garden Expo. It's on today and tomorrow and Sunday. I think it ends about 5:30 on Sunday. So go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I think we've got a link to Garden Expo. Or if you just type in Garden Expo Madison, you're going to find out everything you're going to need to know. And thanks so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.